and welcome back to the Unseen Podcast, a podcast dedicated to missing people, unsolved cases and UK true crime. This week we're heading to Coventry in the 1950s to explore the murder of mother of two, Penelope Magano, in 1954. Penelope's murder was so shocking to the local community that it's never been forgotten, but also sadly, it is still unsolved. This episode contains descriptions that some listeners may find distressing, so listener discretion is advised. The Magano family lived at No. 7 Holland Street in Radford, a suburb of Coventry, around 1.5 miles from the city centre. Coventry is a city located in the West Midlands, and is known for being England's most central city. Penelope and Carlo Magano lived at their Holland Street address with their two sons, Michael and Adrian. The couple weren't native to Coventry, and they'd both grown up on the Isle of Wight. Penelope grew up in Cowes, a town on the island, with her parents, 5 sisters and 2 brothers, while Carlo's family were of Italian descent, but lived in Ventnor, another town on the island. Penelope and Carlo met and married in Cowes in 1930, and their ceremony took place at St Thomas's Roman Catholic Church. The couple continued to live on the island for another 8 years, with Carlo working as a driver and mechanic at a coach company in Ventnor. The couple were popular with residents and neighbours when they lived on the island. They were sociable and attended many events. Their friends describe that there wasn't a happier couple to be found, and they enjoyed their life together. In 1938, the couple decided to move away from their home and set up a new life in Coventry. It was that same year that they welcomed their son Michael, and then 2 years later, another baby boy, Adrian. Carlo gained employment at the Daimler factory and showroom as a demonstrator. The family settled into life in Coventry, continuing to return back to the Isle of Wight for holidays and to visit their families. The Maganos got involved in local life and they took up the hobby of dancing. Penelope had long suffered with back pain and the doctor had recommended that she perhaps take up dancing to ease the pain in her back. The pain had been so severe at one point in her life that she'd spent 3 months in plaster as a result of it. The whole family took on this hobby, even Penelope and Carlo's children were involved. Adrian had even begun taking examinations for his dancing ability. They were a large part of the dancing community in Coventry and were well known to many of the other people in these circles. Penelope had also got involved with the local area, being a member of the Radford Towns Women's Guild. The Maganos were well liked, and by 1954, they were well established in the suburb of Radford. On Monday the 18th of January 1954, Carlo Magano had been at work as usual. Penelope had planned to meet with some friends at around 3 p.m. that afternoon, and the couple had their own plans for the day. Carlo returned back to Holland Street after work at around 6 p.m. and found his younger son Adrian waiting for him outside the house. Adrian had got home around an hour earlier, but wasn't able to get inside, so he waited for his father to get home to let him in. The father and son entered the house and spotted a sight that neither of them were expecting that they would ever see. Penelope was sat in her armchair and she had extensive facial injuries. She was still and lifeless, and it was evident that she had already passed away. The injuries suggested that she'd been battered violently with some sort of weapon, and she also had slashing cuts on her face. The scene was horrific, and Carlo and their son immediately informed the police. The shock of seeing Penelope like that was compounded by the confusion about who would have committed it and when it could possibly have happened. Carlo and the family had been with her at home just a few hours prior, and everything was normal when they'd left. Carlo had returned home around lunchtime and had returned at 1:45 in the afternoon. Their son Adrian had also been at home for his lunch from school and had returned at around 2 p.m. Penelope had plans at 3 p.m., and so the afternoon was going as the family had planned. However, it was now clear that at some point in this time frame between the family leaving and Penelope going out, someone had entered the home and murdered her. Police descended on the house and began a thorough search and examination of the scene. They quickly realised that there didn't seem to have been forced entry into the house, and there were no signs that a struggle had taken place before or during the attack. A search of the house and area was carried out in the hope that a weapon may be recovered. It was evident that she had been attacked with a blunt instrument, and anything that may look like it was checked, including all the tools and hammers that the family owned. The garden was examined, however, nothing was recovered that looked as though it could be the weapon. It was suspected that it could have been a round-headed hammer, and so initially Coventry Police carried out a search for something similar. While the blunt instrument couldn't be recovered, the weapon that caused the slashing cuts across her face was. A large carving knife was discovered close to Penelope's body, and it was clear that this had been used to carry out some of the facial injuries. Fingerprints were taken at the scene, and it was hoped that these may yield some clues as to who the perpetrator was. Due to the violent nature of the crime, Coventry Police sought the help of Scotland Yard and their extensive resources. Chief Superintendent John Edmonds joined the investigation alongside Chief Constable of Coventry, Mr. EWC Pendleton. Mr. Pendleton told the press about the nature of Penelope's murder at the time, saying that there were considerable injuries to her head and face, and that it appeared that this was the work of a fanatic. It was clear that a significant amount of force had been exerted when attacking Penelope, and the reason behind this was unclear. Why had someone wanted to attack and kill her? Detectives canvassed the local area and spoke to the Maganos' neighbours to try and establish who may have last seen her and whether they had seen anything else suspicious in the area at the time. A questionnaire that contained 13 questions was initially given out to 1,500 homes in the Radford neighbourhood. The questions addressed many of the pertinent parts of the investigation, including whether they knew Penelope, whether they had seen her on the day of the murder, whether they had seen her with anyone different other than her family, and whether they saw anyone else around the house. They were also asked for their own whereabouts on January the 18th, between 2 and 5pm, along with whether they also had any interest in dancing. It was hoped that these questionnaires may begin to narrow down a possible suspect list. Professor J.M. Webster from Scotland Yard conducted the post-mortem on Penelope's body and established that her cause of death resulted from the blunt force injuries to her head and face and also from the stab wounds. It was established that Penelope had been stabbed at least 12 times. He also discovered that the murder had taken place between 3 and 4pm that afternoon of January the 18th. Professor Webster confirmed that there had been, quote, no sexual interference during the murder. A reconstruction was carried out by detectives and was attended by Carlo Magano. During the reconstruction, police theorised that the attacker had first stabbed Penelope before attacking her with a hammer. After the murder, they then believed that the killer left the home and locked the door behind him, which was one of the reasons Adrian was unable to enter the home at 5pm. The police believe that they were dealing with a very violent perpetrator, and also possibly someone that Penelope knew. The fact that there was no sign of forced entry into the Magano home suggested that either the person was known to Penelope, or that they had gained access peacefully by some other means. A possible early theory emerged involving a bogus electrical worker claiming to be checking meters. A witness had spotted a man at a house around 150 yards away from the Magano's home during the day that Penelope had been murdered. This man was reportedly attempting to gain access to houses in the area and was then making inappropriate and indecent suggestions towards the women who answered the doors. Coventry Police had information that this man may have also been using a green van. This man had also been reported by other police forces, which was a concern. It was known that he had visited 5 houses in Coventry within a week. The man was described as being between the ages of 25 and 30, around 5 feet 2 to 5 feet 6, and had thick black hair. He wore a red shirt and a dark blue overcoat, and had a slight London accent. The news that Coventry police were looking for this man spread far and wide, and his description was circulated. A man fitting this description was spotted in Birmingham before a man was arrested driving on the Fletchamstead Highway in Coventry. The man was driving a lorry with the name Cooper on the side and was with another male passenger. He accompanied the police to the station and answered questions as to his whereabouts. It's unclear how much information this man had and whether he was the man believed to be the bogus meter man, as he was handed over to Reading police shortly after being detained, as there was a warrant out for his arrest there. Chief Superintendent John Edmonds from Scotland Yard told the press that he believed someone was holding back information from them. He stated, "Someone is deliberately withholding information which could help us. We appeal for them to come forward." Another piece of information became of importance to the investigation when it was discovered that someone had attempted to set fire to the Magano's car using rags soaked in petrol that had been placed under the bonnet of the car before being set alight. The damage to the car was not significant. However, this incident had more importance now following on from Penelope's murder. Was this in any way connected? There was also the fact that Penelope had exhibited some unusual behaviour prior to her murder. She had resigned from the Radford Townswomen Guild unexpectedly, which came as a surprise to some people. She reportedly explained that she was too tired in the afternoons to attend the meetings. Despite the fact that she had resigned, she was still seen leaving the house, and occasionally she had her dance shoes with her. The fact that Penelope may have had her dance shoes was not at all out of the ordinary, as this was one of her interests and passions in life. As this was such a big part of her life, it was scrutinised by police as a possible motive behind her murder. People within this circle were questioned, and the theory that someone known to her from this part of her life may have committed the murder was discussed. The idea that she made enemies while out dancing or that someone murdered her because of her dance background were explored, as well as where Penelope may have been going in the afternoons. However, nothing of note was found as a result of these investigations. There was nothing found that suggested anyone would have wanted to murder her. There were some discoveries made during the investigation, though. Fingerprint experts had been called in to examine the Magano home, and they had recovered what were described as important discoveries. 5 fingerprints and some fragments of fingerprints were recovered from the home, and they were being checked against all fingerprints on file. Police stated that these fingerprints were not recovered from the knife. The search to find a match for the fingerprints, however, would only be successful if they found a suspect to match them to, and this was proving difficult. Another discovery was made less than half a mile from the Magano's home on Heathcote Crescent. Inside a telephone box, detectives found blood stains, which indicated that someone had come into the box with blood on his hands. The proximity to the Magano's home was one of the reasons that this became a crucial discovery. Police theorised that the perpetrator may have fled the home with blood on their hands and clothes, ran through Radford Common, which was between the two locations, and entered the phone box, transferring the blood there. Police examined the phone box closely, dusting the kiosk for fingerprints and removing the glass panels from around the outside to check for any evidence. The receiver and the phone book were removed for examination also. This evidence appeared to match 2 witness sightings from the area at the time, who spotted a man with his right hand wrapped in a tea towel in that same phone box on the day that Penelope was murdered. Witnesses described him as being 27 years old, 5 feet 6 inches tall, with a medium build and a long face with sunken cheeks. He had dark hair and was wearing a dark trilby hat and a black or navy overcoat. This information was certainly compelling, alongside further witness statements of a man who was seen thumbing a lift out of Coventry the next morning, the 19th. This man had his right hand in an improvised bandage and was then seen hanging on to the back of a lorry. He was a similar height and was around 30 to 36 years old with a protruding chin. Whether this man had anything to do with the murder is still unclear, but the timing and the location certainly appear suspicious. Despite the police's theories, gossip was circulating about Carlo Magano's possible involvement in his wife's murder. This was something that he addressed openly in the press and strenuously denied. He stated that he was at work at the time of the murder and that his foreman told police that he knows that Carlo didn't leave. He said he wasn't alone for more than a few minutes. He told the papers, "I had nothing to do with my wife's death. I know about the rumours going round Coventry. I know what they're whispering. But I'm innocent. I have no secrets or anything to hide from anyone. I have not the faintest idea who hated my wife enough to do this terrible thing." The family mourned Penelope's loss, and when her funeral took place on the 25th of January 1954, they wanted it to be a private affair, with as little media intrusion as possible. 15 people were in attendance, however over 30 wreaths were sent to honour Penelope. The investigation continued over the next few weeks and months, with police interviewing long-distance lorry drivers and questioning local residents. Over 25,000 people were spoken to, and thousands of people completed the questionnaire about their whereabouts on that night. Unfortunately, the huge investigation did not find any answers, and the months turned into years, with nobody being arrested for Penelope's murder. Nobody has been named as a suspect, and there has been no new information forthcoming from anybody over the years. It has been almost 70 years since Penelope's murder occurred, and her family has still not had justice for her murder. Were any of these theories or witness sightings related to Penelope? Did she know her killer, or was it a stranger? Would any DNA or fingerprints recovered still be useful or even usable this many years later? These things are still unclear and may remain that way unless new evidence or a new witness comes forward. Despite the passage of time, this is not unheard of, and I hope that by telling her story, people may remember her and may even be able to help. If you know anything about the murder of Penelope Magano in 1954, please contact Coventry Police on 101. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Thank you as always to my patrons for all your amazing support, and thank you to our newest patron, Michelle. If you want to see what we offer, including bonus episodes, early access episodes, stickers and shoutouts, head over now. The link is in the show notes. I just want to let you all know that I will be releasing a bonus episode on Monday the 29th of November. We celebrate 4 years of the release of the first episode of Unseen that day, so I'm releasing a bonus episode chosen by my patrons, so keep an eye out for that. Please do follow me on social media, subscribe to the channel on YouTube, and share the episode so more people can hear them. If you'd like to leave a review, that's also appreciated. If you have any case suggestions or comments, head to theunseenpod@gmail.com and drop me an email. I'd love to hear from you. As always, I'm Caprice, and this has been Unseen.